Hello there and welcome to Full Chat with me, David Prutton.
And me, Ewan Thomas, celebrating all things we love about being on two wheels. Now, Full Chat is powered by Bikesure. As the UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker, Bikesure will tailor a quote to your exact needs, saving you money on your annual moped, bike and scooter insurance.
Don't forget to press subscribe on YouTube so you never miss an episode, or you can press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Now, today's guest is an internet sensation, literally a YouTube god. And unless he proves me wrong, he's the kind of guy that when you look at him, you think, oh, I could be his mate. I'd love a drink with him. He seems really nice. But until recently, nobody knew what he looked like because he goes around London on his motorbike, giving out fist pumps and Haribos, literally changing the perception of bikers, bringing warmth and happiness to everyone. It is, of course, Mr. Harvey King, a.k.a. Harvey Rides Bikes. Hi, Harvey.
Hello. Wow, what an intro.
Well, yeah, you say what an intro, but you kind of burst on the scene over the last year or two. Like, I've followed you, and it's just been an amazing, pardon the pun, ride to think that, you know, you go around London, you ride big, shiny bikes, and people notice the bike and go, oh, my God, you're that guy, and then you hand out sweets, and it's just like, you just seem to be spreading the love. It's lovely.
Yeah, it's been mad. I never would have thought it would have got to this, whatever this is. I never would have thought when I first started that it would get to sort of this level. But yeah, it's been crazy. I just can't quite believe it. Every single time I sort of reach some sort of plateau, and it, you know, sort of it's the same for a while. It just is another sort of big burst of, you know, another video has gone mad, and I can't believe it. Yeah.
As, I mean, to follow up on Ewan's initial question, Harvey, is he the type of fella that you could be friends with? And you can quite clearly say no, mate, it's fine. Sat shaking his head going, no.
Put your helmet back on. Don't want to speak.
Exactly. Yeah. You drive off.
Exactly. I've got it over there. I can go get it.
The wonderful thing is as well, obviously, given the wonders of modern technology, we're talking to you on a different continent because you're in Australia, and it's very much content based. It's very much road trips, etc. But I presume, I mean, given even though how adventurous you are and how good you are on two wheels, it wasn't two wheels that got you over there.
No, it wasn't. It was a plane. I was in the sky on this occasion. Although I have researched if I could actually, you know, get it on a boat somehow, or like sort of get my own bike here. But I haven't sort of solidified those plans. But yeah, by plane on this occasion.
I tell you what, you need a few Haribos in your pocket for that journey, wouldn't you? You'd be on the boat for months and like handing out sweets. By the way, tell me you've got a deal with them because you give out the fantastic, you know, what are they called? The
Tangfastic.
Tangtastic ones and the Star Mix. I mean, what I just love is whether it's a builder in a white van or a lady on a bike or whoever it might be, their faces when you say, want some sweets? It's just really nice. Like, I can't imagine many people refusing you sweets. Everyone loves sweets, surely.
Yeah, I mean, maybe like the 1% do. Or I think it's just the initial, it's not the sweets themselves. It's like the interaction of me going, hello, how's it going? And they think it's some sort of scam or I'm trying to sell them something. So maybe like I can think of two off the top of my brain where people have gone, I'm okay, can you leave? I'm like, okay, no worries. And I just sit off. But yeah, I haven't got a Haribo deal. I am not sponsored. I've bought them all. So I think I'm something like, I'm over £1,000 down in sweets.
In sweets? Yeah. My God. So it's literally costing you money to spread the love. I mean, that's even more endearing, Harvey. You know, we talk about the question that Ewan said about perception of bikers, and it's something we've discussed at length because of different people that we've spoken to on here from different generations as well of biking. So I'm intrigued to see what people's take on it is because I find myself kind of, as we all do, scrolling, you look through Instagram and what gets thrown your way algorithmically. And you do see there's a certain faction which I just cannot get my head around where it's almost pushed down the road of kind of rage bait where it's, look at me, tear-arsing around on the bike and someone's reacted. And then you're reading, and again, the sad thing is you get stuck reading the comments going, right, this is all just done to create an argument and engagement. Whereas with yours, which is done for the most wonderfully altruistic thing of just bonding people, whether it's a fist bump, as Ewan says, to a bus driver or making sure that I'm a biker on the road and I'm actively engaging in the other people around me. I'm not nipping in between everyone as quick as I can to get away as quick as I can. I'm not trying to get in someone's space to cause any problems. It's almost kind of saying, look, we're all part of the same road using fraternity and we've all got our own space, haven't we?
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the reasons I've started. It's very much one of the big reasons now I do what I do. I think there's a stigma with bikers in general. There's a stereotype that people don't like us. And I think that varies from country to country. I mean, in Australia, it's not people don't really move across for you or like you, or they'd be seen as a bit of a menace. And I think that's the same in the UK to a certain extent with social media. It's one of the reasons I started, actually, big time, is because you see these videos that would go viral of people doing flybys at 200 miles an hour or popping a wheelie or running away from police or smashing a mirror. And I just thought, these guys on sports bikes or other bikes as well, or, you know, these gangs in America blocking traffic and things like that. It's like, these people are getting millions and millions of views. And I've met someone at traffic lights and then gone out for dinner with them and their friends, or and then I've had a barbecue and they've joined my mates. And it's like, if I could tell, if I, you know, there's people in WhatsApp groups that I've met at traffic lights. And I just think that I want to tell those stories, you know, what biking is for me anyway, and a bunch of my friends as well. And kind of, no one was making those videos. Even people that were doing rough, like some rough commentary stuff, they were talking through what they were doing, and they were just sort of these brain, you know, splurges of what the kind of what I do, actually. But they, nothing was happening in the video. So I'm going to go to school, or I'm going to go look for parking. And then they'd ride around talking, and then they'd find parking. And I think, and I'd look at the views and then think 5 million. I was like, well, they're looking for parking.
Yeah.
And they've got 5 million views. And I've met people at traffic lights that I'm friends with. And if I could make videos like that, and I gave sweets to people way before I started filming as well. If I could sort of, you know, show those interactions every single day, I was getting home to my housemates and going, this happened, and then this happened. Yeah. You wouldn't believe it. I wish I was filming it. You wouldn't believe it if it wasn't filmed. And then this happened. So that was what kind of led to me filming my commute to work.
It's really nice, though, because, as you say, I think bikers do get a bad rap, and there's some lovely people in the world. And we've had some great guests on here, and, you know, being bikers ourselves, met some wonderful people as well. And I think it's really nice. We talk a lot about mental health and how going out on a bike sometimes just to switch off from the world is a really good thing, to gather your thoughts and be on your own. And I personally love that. But actually, you don't have to be on your own. Like you said, chatting to people at traffic lights and spreading that happiness. And I think it's really, really good what you do, because you show, obviously, bikers from another light. And especially London, where, you know, it's a rat race. People are in a rush to get somewhere. No one's very friendly, really. But actually stop them and say, how's your day going? They go, oh, actually, yeah, it's going really well. While I'm here, have some sweets. And I think you get the best out of people, and that's lovely. Was your background, though, because obviously you were saying to your housemates and your friends, whatever, you know, this happened, that happened, I should document it. Was this always the plan to, like, you know, do social media, or did you fall into it because it blew up the way it has?
I was in 2023, I think it was. I was looking for a project, because I would get back from work, go to the gym for 2 hours or something, and then I would play. I'm massively into gaming, so I would game for 3 or 4 hours or even 5 hours. And I had this new job, and I was working at about 50%, 40% of the capacity I was before. So there was this gap in me that I was like, I want to work towards something, some sort of project. And it was going to be guitar, piano, Spanish, or making videos. And the catalysts for those were getting into two accidents around in London. It was like 20 miles an hour, nothing. It was fine. If I was filming, I could go, hey, look at the GoPro footage. It's like, it's not my fault, kind of thing. I'm actually still in one of the cases now. It was in 2022. Getting these interactions all the time, and like uploading my internal monologue. And it was more to work towards something and edit, and rather than sitting and playing video games, which I still do, to be honest, but I could edit these videos and work towards like a project and see if I could build it out in some capacity. So that's kind of how it started. Is I wanted to replace work towards something, have a project that I and learn how to edit and like and find a style and show bikers in a different light. But yeah, I would never would have thought it would have blown up the way it has. Yeah. Like that, I guess those are the best things.
It's organic. You haven't pushed it. It's organically grown, and you clearly are a likable guy. And, you know, we'll come to that later in terms of you've revealed yourself now and stuff, and it's gone from strength to strength. But I think obviously what you film, people clearly want to see it because it's interesting, and it brings, as I said earlier, it brings that joy, that bit of warmth to our screens in a world where we're full of negative news and it's stressful out there. There's a guy riding around on lovely bikes giving out sweets. It's awesome.
Harvey, the thing that really fascinates me with it, without sounding like a kind of grumpy old uncle, is that kind of the timing of what you've done, of it being content that is really literally engaging to watch, is really upbeat, but also is really successful, because for one, Harvey rides bikes, there's probably an abundance of people that want to do something similar. Like, I'm sure there's many bikers that go, oh, that's pretty cool. And they look at the figures and you go, wow, 1.2 million foot. And you're thinking, Jesus, the numbers involved are absolutely mind boggling. And then there's doing it like that, but then there's doing it in your way, which is absolutely blown up. How much of it is science? How much of it is a feel of what you think will do well? How much of it is timing? Because I understand there's a certain element of when you post and how you post to work with an algorithm that makes you, because you're looking for maximum impact, aren't you, with each and every post that you take, I presume, quite a bit of time to edit to get it to look so slick, professional and instantly engaging.
And sometimes edited to make it not look professional.
Right, okay. As well. Yeah.
A lot goes into it. So I my editing is a bit of a nightmare in a lot of ways, but great in others. I never want to be riding around hoping something happens. On my journeys that I go on, unless I'm doing a collab with someone or filming with another person as like an arrangement thing, I never go out to film. I'm going on a legitimate journey, and I'm just filming everywhere.
Is that always the case then, Harvey? That was another question I was going to ask, whether you can actually go out for a ride without it being part of what you're going to do, or whether it's the content comes off the back of you being out riding. Does wherever the ride go, does that literally come first?
I would never ever, and I never want to be in a situation where I'm filming for content unless it's a review on a bike, or it's filming something with my brother, or like a YouTube sponsor thing that we're doing. But that's usually filmed on the way to a legitimate journey anyway. I just feel like you could smell it if I was sort of biking around London, going up to windows and going, hello, please talk to me, trying to get a reaction. I think you could sense it from me, even subconsciously, and from the other person. So I only really engage now, and was before it, when people engage with me first, kind of, or they smile at me or give me a nod. I'm like, right, okay, that they might be open to speaking with me or whatever. But in terms of the editing, I'm on a year's worth of backlog. So I could technically stop and still upload for another year. Wow. if I really wanted to, which is another thing where there's no pressure on me. So if I, the way I've quit my job and now I do this full time, which is amazing. But I have 2 years of like savings to try and make it work. Mm-hmm. So what I've done now with this sort of strategy is I've got a gym membership in London, and I ride to the gym every single morning and then ride home. And if nothing happens, I don't mind. And if something happens, it's great. And sometimes I get 3 seconds of someone saying nice bike in a week. And sometimes there's a particular day where, 10 people recognize me, or 7 or whatever, or I'm just talking loads and I'm on when I'm singing and whatever. And then I've got 4 reels and 1 YouTube video in a day.
I tell you what, it sounds genuinely like a dream job. You get on a motorbike, you go to the gym. That's my 2 favorite things. You get back on your motorbike, and hopefully you've got some content. If not, you've got 2 years worth stocked up anyway. But it's awesome. What's it like? You said earlier about unless you're collabing with someone like Milo, Troy Hawk. You've had some really big profile people clearly want to be associated with you. What's it like when you're approached by other people and they want to film with you? I mean, is it sort of like a pinch me moment? Like, A, I'm making a living out of something that was started out as a bit of fun, and B, other influencers want to work with me.
Yeah, it's just mad. Yeah, I mean, like at the time that it was filmed, Troy Hawk was one of the biggest things. I've watched him for years. He started in 2018, maybe before. And I remember seeing all the F1 stuff in Man City. We went out for a coffee and organized it all. And he's great. He's so friendly. And his character is, I would say, is an extension of himself.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
He got the mic and he was going, did you see that person and that? But he just, like, that person, did the camera pick up that person? And did you hear that line and this and that? You're, what you said was really funny then, and we should put, edit it this way. He's very, it's almost like he's, it's an exaggerated version of himself, and it gives an excuse to talk to strangers and do what he does, and he gets a buzz out of it. But at the time, it was the biggest. I felt really nervous, and I was up till 2 o'clock in the morning, double checking all the mics and the batteries and the SD cards and the, you know, everything. And yeah, there was a moment where he was in my house before we went out, and I was going, "Oh my god, Joy Hawk's in my house." I would have thought I'd be here. Like, oh, yeah, this is mad. But then, yeah, working with Mabel as well, and meeting her dad, Cameron McVeigh, who, you know, produced Massive Attack, and Simon Brodkin, the guy who used to play Lee Nelson, but Simon Brodkin,
yes,
now doing that comedy stuff. And we've talked to a bunch of other people that have been maybes as well, like high profile people, and the fact that was even considered, it didn't work out, but that is in, like, you know, Diaries and the danger and the assurance of being on a bike, but to even be considered and by some of those other names, it's just mad. Yeah, it's just mad.
That element of those collaborations, Harvey, I mean, because of what the names are amazing. I mean, and what the nature of what you're actually doing, because by virtue of the content and the engagement, it's and your way of making it as natural and as authentic as possible. I mean, is there a loose base of a script or anything, or is it just kind of, let's crack on, see what happens? And I suppose, like you say, so you might have 1 week where nobody says anything. Is it the same sometimes when you've set this up and you're thinking, we need something to happen here, but you just let it happen, go with the flow of what the day brings?
My strategy has always been, put the camera on, forget about it. Try not to perform to it. Try not to be conscious that it's on. That's been my strategy. The only change that I've seen with what I do and where I start to consciously think about storytelling, okay, I need to speak to camera at this point and I need to do this now, is my travel series. So I want to grow out my YouTube, and I think if this is going to be a long-term thing and something that I can do full-time, I think YouTube has to work. Because it's where the money is through ad revenue and views and opportunity, and the people on there follow your journey a lot more. So when I filmed the travel series, there was I learned on the go, and you could probably see it through the episodes where I start to get a bit better at talking to camera. I start to get a bit better at voiceover. So we were filming Riding from London to Greece. It's 8 episodes. I think 4 have been uploaded as of now, but you know, there's going to be episode 5 in a bit. I don't know when this is going to be uploaded. It might be all uploaded at the time this is uploaded. But that was a huge learning curve, because previously the GoPro was on and it would just film everything, and it was very outward, as in it's not about me, it's about the people that I interact with and the situations I'm sort of in, and it's very outward. Whereas this travel series, I don't think you can just rely on riding from London to Greece and then leaving the camera on and extracting the gold. There is an element of that, because I was recording everybody's voices, and you go in and it's almost like a moving podcast on a bike. So there is an element of that. But when we woke up in the morning, there were certain things we had to sort of cross off, like, right, we're in Italy and we're in Bari, but at the end of this episode we need to get to here, 579 miles away. We're gonna go to Stelvio Furka Pass, and we need to fix this bag, and someone stole a copper pipe off the back of my bag. So it's a bit more of that. And I really, really struggle talking to camera. On the first episode, I walked around Soissons in France for half an hour, and we used 30 seconds of the footage, because I was sort of going with this. I just felt like an idiot with the camera looking at me, and people in public naturally look at you. So I got up really early.
What's he got to say? What's he talking about?
Is that a little bit because you're used to being incognito? You know, because you used to have the helmet on for a long, long time. You've only just revealed yourself, isn't it? So do you think maybe because you had that comfort blanket of the past of being not known?
Yeah.
And, you know, one was judging you in your own mind. But let's be honest, I think since you've revealed yourself, it's gone from strength to strength. So, you know, it's all good.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it has, but I think the view, the videos that blew up, I think there was a moment in time where I went from 600K to 1.1 mil in 10 days. And those were all videos where I didn't show my face. They were all going around London, GoPro footage. So it was still the original sort of those videos. But then I'm able to talk on stories and it's my face and you know who it is. And I think that will resonate with people more, knowing that I'm not this sort of faceless entity.
I was going to ask you about the bikes. How important is it? Because clearly, like you said before, when it's just you with your visor down, the first thing people notice is the bikes. I'm assuming this wouldn't work if you were riding around on a CBR50 or something. You know, the fact that you've got impressive bikes is the starting point for people. Oh, nice, cool bike, man. Because for you, is it very important then, not being materialistic, but you need to ride, do you not, bikes that are pretty wow, they've got the wow factor to start that conversation, or not? Or do you think you could have ridden any bike?
I think I could have ridden any bike. I mean, I think that there are certain videos that when I'm filtering the sound of the Bonneville going through traffic, like that sort of World War II machine gun, you kind of, as it goes through traffic, is there's an appeal to that. But you can't, I don't even show the bike that much, apart from the tank and the handlebars.
No, but I mean people who interact with you on the street. Is it the initial right thing they notice, the noise or the colour of the bike? Wow, nice. But I'm not talking, not so much the success of your videos, but I mean that initial icebreaker when you're talking to people, quite a few people do notice the bike first, yeah. Do they not?
Yeah, I think, yes. I think if I think I get into the interactions anyway, because I've ridden multiple bikes around London and it's the same thing sort of happens. Yeah. The thing that made me realize that is when I rode a Triumph Rocket for about a month. I had it for 2 weeks, and it was a loan bike. It was a press bike, so I'm very lucky. I get to ride the manufacturer's bikes now, which is cool. And I had it for 2 weeks, and they went, right, we're going to take it back. And I said, what are your goals here? And to be honest, it's just so the bike is seen. They like yeah. it. They sit in the warehouse, so if they give it to someone who it might be seen somewhere, it's good, beneficial for them. And I said, this bike is like content times five, because it's so massive. It turns so many heads. People don't know what it is. People come running over. People who don't care about bikes whatsoever like it, or it invokes a reaction out of them. Please, can I have it for a bit longer? And they went, yeah, right, yeah. And those videos did really well.
Yeah.
So it can be a factor, because people are coming up to you.
Yeah. Well, it's a little bit like Gordon Ramsay driving around now in this new Aston Martin, which is all over social media. I mean, Aston Martin must be loving it, because the car is so eye-catching, like, you know, the Triumph is, that it creates its own news in essence. So, yes, it's a no-brainer for them to lend you bikes, because you're the hottest property out there at the moment, 100% on social media with motorbikes. So, well, stop it. No, but you are. So, like, you know, if I was a manufacturer, I'd be chucking bikes your way, definitely.
There's a guy that I've got this on film, actually, a guy called Nigel. Shout out to Nigel. He came up to me and said, what do you think of the Rocket? And I went to go speak. He said, before you say anything, I was going to buy a Harley and I bought a Rocket because of your videos.
No way.
There you go.
Hang on. I'm not getting any money for this.
You need to be on commission. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the way business minds work. That's the wonderful part about it, Harvey. Where someone might have gone, yeah, brilliant, and then run off going, hang on, something doesn't quite make sense here. I need to make sure that somebody back at Triumph actually knows what's going on. Let's just have a quick pause for a sec, a quick bit of mid-show housekeeping.
Yeah.
If you haven't already, please press subscribe on YouTube. You can also see Harvey, of course, on YouTube, so you never miss an episode. Or press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from. Just going back to that point you made a minute ago, Harvey, about the jump in followers from 600,000 over a million with that kind of helmet of anonymity. Was there any kind of reticence then with moving away from that? Because the success that has gone hand in hand with that absolutely speaks for itself. But is it more about, as you say, moving into the YouTube sphere to really grow what you've done? Because being able to come away from a normal job to do this just sounds amazing. And I bet from your point of view, because you love it so much, you've got to be thinking, right, where's the next port of call for this? Because you want to be doing this forever, really, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I think being anonymous was great, and it is fun, and I leaned into it and had fun with it. And I think there is something to be said for it, as in I think it was beneficial to my account, that sort of that thing. But I do think if it grew to a certain level, say that I'm at now, and then I revealed, I think that would have almost been worse, because it was still on the upturn, and I just thought if I reveal it, everyone knew coming in, what kind of won't know the difference. But then there's an old crew of people who did. I was very nervous to do it because I did wonder if the page and the channel heavily relies on the fact that I am anonymous. But yeah, I want to take it to the next level. I want to talk to camera. I want to be able to tell stories on YouTube and I think it opens more doors. I want to do stuff like this, you know, the podcast. I'm actually starting a podcast with my friend Will. So creatively, I think I wanted to do that. And
it would have been very niche, Harvey, with you sat with a helmet on trying to do that podcast.
At least people like you. I saw something on social media the other day. It was so harsh in America. This girl drives past in a car and this guy's getting off a nice bike. And she says, "Hey, nice bike." And he says, "Can I have your number?" And she says, "Take your helmet off first." And he takes her helmet off and she just drives off. And he's like, "Thanks a lot." Honestly, I could have died for the kid. Yeah, and he was quite a good looking boy as well. So at least when you revealed yourself, mate, the viewing figures are still going that way. It could have been a lot worse.
Well, the internet's the internet, so you can't please everyone. So I knew there might be this camp that's like, "Oh God, you know, put the helmet back on," or "Never mind," or like, or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. Can we go back to the? Can I just ask you a bit about the beginning in terms of your love affair with bikes? Because the majority of people we speak on here, they're like, "Oh yeah, my dad got me into bikes," you know, including myself, or you know, I had an uncle who rode motorbikes. Was it always bikes for you? Was it a love from a young age, or was it just a way of commuting to work? When did your love affair with bikes start?
So I'm 3 years in. So I've been riding 3 years. I used to be a personal trainer, and one of my clients, a personal training client, liked me and wanted to hire me in property. And he gave me like a company motorbike, like a company car, but a motorbike, so I could get around London doing property inspections and lettings and whatever. And I loved zipping around on a 125 in London, the traffic, and there was this corner in Kingston where I used to live on a one-way system, and it was long and sweeping around, and I tried to get lower and lower and lower, and you know, every single day, and I just loved it. That lasted 6 months. He got rid of me, actually, but he gave me the bike and offered me loads of money to leave. I couldn't afford it at the time, but I tried to do my theory, and I was going to do my test because I was just like, "I've got to get a bike," and failed my theory. And then I sold the bike and sort of left it by the wayside, because even if I had passed, I couldn't afford a bike anyway. It wasn't until, but I had it in me. I thought, I did love that. And 8 years later, I was around my uncle's house, and he's got a Z1000. And nice. I'm sorry if you've heard this story before, listeners.
No, just think a Z1000, that'll do it.
But I was like, "Can I sit on it?" He's like, "Yeah." So it's my uncle's bike. So I'm sitting on it and going, making noises and pressing all the buttons and trying to remember all the levers. You know, 8 years, not really, you know, I'm just like, "Where are the buttons and what's going on?" He said, "You can ride it if you want." And my uncle is a massive person. And I was like, "You sure?" And he goes, yeah. So he puts all the gear on me, and I'm sort of like, the sleeves are here and the gloves don't fit and the helmet's wrapping around. And he goes, "Go on then." And I go, How do you start it? And he starts it, and I stall it 3 times on the gravel, and I don't know what I'm doing. And I forget that first gear is down, so I'm just trying to get it up into second. And there's one last time, I'm in the Cotswolds, and I'm just looking and go, you, this is a rocket ship. This compared to anything I've ever ridden. And are you sure? And he goes, yeah, you're probably a better rider than me. I thought, like, I don't know. And we went round his private airfield. And I completely fell in love. Completely, yeah. Within 5 minutes, all the muscle memory came back. I'm like, "Oh yeah, first gear is down. And then that's neutral." And yeah, it all came back. And I kept pulling the clutch in around corners, and I almost drifted into the bank. But after 5 minutes, it all just clicked, and I was flying. I just sort of, it was amazing. It was just felt like, I've never done drugs, but I felt like it. I imagine what it was. That's what it would be like. And there's a video of me flying past his like where he lives, of me just going screaming past. And I just got off the bike and thought, and just booked in everything. So I booked in my theory, booked in my tests, bought a bike before I even passed. It was all I could think about. I go very full send in things. That's it. I go through phases. that was there's one of it. And you know, a few months later, I'd passed and bought a Z1000, slightly newer one, but I bought a Z1000.
The internet owes a lot to your uncle. So that sounds like a wicked uncle to me. What a top bloke. Yeah, they to trust Kevin. You on this bike. Yeah, yeah.
Love Kevin. Yeah.
I was similar in that sense, Harvey, that the bike was there and bought before the test was done. It's a great carrot to dangle, isn't it? You keep going in the garage and have a look at it, thinking, very soon. And once you get back and get on it. And then, like you said, it's that instant kind of sitting down and feeling like you're at home on something, which I think we can all relate to riding bikes. So when it comes to bikes that you own, are you in the fortunate few that are a multi-bike owner? But saying that, I suppose, when you can call on some of the big hitters in the biking world to borrow things for as long as you need and do a very good job in selling them for them on the streets. what's categorically yours, and what do you manage to get access to when it comes to getting out on two wheel?
So my first bike was the Kawasaki Z1000 Sagomi. It's 2016. It's the Z1000 within the cherry sort of red, but it's got red bolts on it and aftermarket levers and grips and Motor Gadget, but you know, mirrors and things like that. I had that for 3 months before I discovered custom culture and cafe races and scramblers. Mm. And I remember thinking, oh, I've done this all wrong. I think I should have got a Triumph. So I saved up a Triumph and then had that customized. So the Triumph is a Triumph Bonneville T120 2020. Bought it with 500 miles on it secondhand. Had it customized, and that is my other bike. So I still own the Kawasaki Z1000 and the Triumph Bonneville. I've actually just recently bought a crashed XSR 700, a Yamaha. And my brother and I are going to start, we're going to try. We don't know what we're doing. And I guess that's the fun of it as well. We're going to try and get it back on the road and customize it. So custom pipes, painting, suspension, wheels, everything, and just sort of rebuild it as a bike.
Yeah. That'll be a popular video. That just like, you know, I know someone does that in the car world. He restores crashed cars, and he does so well out of it. So maybe there's another series for you and your brother to start there as well.
Yeah. So yeah, absolutely. We want to dip our toe in there. We're going to try and get it in the Bike Shed show. I also want another zippy around bike around London that's a bit lighter. So he's got an MT07. He's got an MT07, and it's the same bike really, but it's a bit more classic. So I own that. And then the manufacturers that I sort of, that let me use their fleet are Triumph, sometimes Royal Enfield, BMW, who else? I feel bad. I've spoken with Maving. You sort of speak to everybody. You go to these events and then you go to the MCN, for example, and you sort of go around and chat to everybody, really. I've never ridden a cow... a Ducati.
Oh, nice.
But I've spoken to them, those guys as well. Harley, so you know, I've got access to their fleet. How it all started is Triumph's PR company got in touch with me and said, oh, do you want to ride a Triumph for a bit? Yeah. And so, how's this work? It's like, well, what do you want? What do you want to ride? And I went on the website and went, right, most expensive. And it was the Rocket. I went the Rocket. Yeah. And I thought they were going to say, bugger off. And they went, yeah, right, how long do you want it for? I went, okay, I don't know, a weekend? And they went, oh, what about 2 weeks? I went, all right. And they turned up, didn't sign anything, chucked me the keys, and he buggered off. So I just thought, what? And I called them and went, what's going on? And he said, well, we've written up the loan agreement, it's yours. I said, loan agreement, money, I don't want to pay, I've got a bike. And they went, no, it's free. I said, right, what is the deal? What's going on? It's too good to be true. There's a 25,000 2.5-litre bike in front of my house.
Jesus.
What? And, you know, I've been doing this for 6 months kind of thing, and all of a sudden they just plonk it on your driveway. Well, I don't live on it. I don't have a driveway in the front of the house. And they go, right, how this works is Triumph and most manufacturers have, you probably might know, but they've got a warehouse full of, say, 50 to 100 bikes, and they are for film sets, celebrities, you know, people that are in bands or Tom Hardy or things like that, or proper YouTubers and things like that. And then people like me who have a bit of a following. I said, right, okay, so like, what do you get out of it? I said, right, because I'm not going to run around the bike and go, this exhaust does this and these are tires do this and the engine, because one, I don't make that stuff anyway, but two, I don't know what I'm talking about. So what? And they said, well, make the videos you're making anyway. So that's the thing. I don't make them. I just go to work and come back and stuff happens. I don't film. So it stressed me out a bit. I don't want to annoy you. You've given me this thing. I said, no, do whatever you want with it. And if it comes up in a video and it's just seen and it's there, that's good. I went, right, okay, so.
What does your brother, obviously your brother's a biker, we've established that, and your friends, what do they think about it? We say, you won't believe what's happened. I've just had a 25 grand bike dropped off. You know, you are in shock how quickly you've risen. But in terms of your mates, what do they say? You lucky bastard, or they like fair play. What do they think about it all?
So I think it's, actually, I'll be honest, it's a real mixture. So you have a bunch of friends that sort of, can you promote this? Or my mum's just started this business and candles and this, that, and the other. Some people don't like it. A lot of mates take the mick. And then you'd get really, really, really supportive people as well that are just really supportive and love it. And yeah, but I know a lot of people personally that they don't understand it or they don't get it. They think it's weird. And my brother thinks it's cool, but it's hard. He's like getting blood out of a stone out of Humphrey sometimes. But he thinks it's cool. What he finds weird is people recognizing me.
Yeah.
And when I did my first ride out, people asking for photos. And my friend that I went to school with, I've known him for 17 years. He was filming it and going whatever, and there was a line of people asking to take photos. And he looked at me and went, "What's going on?" I was like, "I don't know. I don't know what's happening." So that. Yeah, the reactions honestly have varied. Can you follow me on Harvey Rides Bikes? And can you do this? And can you do that? Can you promote this? And can you wear this T-shirt? Oh, it's really, really, it's mixed.
Yeah.
But generally positive.
Yeah, but that's with having somebody by your side. Obviously, one that you've related to and mates that you've known for years. That's a good balancer, though, isn't it? It's you being able to chat with you has been a real pleasure, Harvey, and your genuine kind of humility about the whole thing, which in what we're discussing is an unmitigated success. It's a wonderful, wonderful story. Without, hopefully that doesn't sound condescending, because you are literally doing what you love and making a living out of it. So being able to have those people by your side that can, I'm not saying for one second it would happen, but gently take the piss a little bit about why are all these people lining up to talk to you, whopper. We've run you for ages. So you're kind of going, well, but that's inherently what, that's when you try and work out, and you and I've discussed it, and our wonderful producer Dave, but when you're looking at putting stuff out on socials and using socials and all that type of stuff, it's a case of talking to someone like yourself who's absolutely cracked that particular code for the niche that you're in, loving what you're doing, spreading light and joy with it, and ticking loads of boxes. So if people don't understand it, doesn't really matter, mate, does it?
Yeah,
you got something going, this is ace. I've got just been on a rocket for 2 weeks. I mean, it's got handlebars and an exhaust. Anything else you want to know, Triumph? It's got a seat. It's got gears. Yeah. That's the depth of what I've got. But I can tell you how it feels to ride it. I can show you the joy that it spreads being able to get out and ride it. So there's no other definition needed other than you love it, isn't there?
Yeah. Completely in love with riding. You spoke about mental health earlier as well. Like if I go for a ride, I instantly feel better, or I'm just happy to be on a bike anyway. People have spoken to me, it's like, your voice is very different. I was like, well, I'm shouting in traffic and I'm just happy to be on a bike and I love it. So, or I've just been singing my little heart out in my own little world. So if you catch me just sort of drinking a green tea in the bike shed, I probably won't be singing as loud as I can. In
there. Shout me out. Yeah. What's in your green tea, mate? Jesus.
It's the beauty of it, isn't it? We all share that common theme that we can't maybe quite pinpoint what it is, but there's something magical about being on a bike, singing like an idiot inside your helmet or whatever it is, escaping from the stresses of everyday life. Biking is magical and it brings so many emotions and you are adding to that magic. So what you're doing is brilliant. I love following you. I love seeing you interact with people and, you know, long may it continue, because you're doing some good for the biking world.
Oh, thanks very much. That's the goal.
Before we go to our wonderful final question, Harvey, who's you talk about people coming up and asking for pictures and stuff. Who's walked up to you and you've gone, oh my God, that's so-and-so. Oh, you want to come and talk to me? Who's the biggest kind of star that you've been in the same vicinity of that's come to you as Harvey Rides
Bikes? Come to me?
Yeah.
The record label Polydor came to me. But they've got people, they've got them. That's how the Mabel thing came about.
Becky
Hill, which fell through. But, you know, they manage Kings of Leon and Billie Eilish and Phineas and a bunch of those people. So, yeah, Sony as well, Sony Music.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like that is sort of, it all sort of a bit of a blur. But then a few days later, you're sat in their office and you're going, oh, God, you know, this is different.
That must be so cool doing it on your own terms, because you talk about huge multinational corporations and you've probably blipped there on your bike, handing out Haribo and bolted into the office. Helmet comes off. Hey, guys, you're Show me what you got. Come on.
So then that was very flattering. That's very flattering. Yeah.
Well, you deserve it. As I said at the beginning, you're doing some lovely things and people are recognising you for it. Your figures speak for themselves. And, you know, I think you're well known for doing something nice. And I think that makes a real relatable person that you are, because you're not well known. You didn't go on Love Island. You've done something cool.
Hey, you never know. If somebody's right, mate.
giving out Haribo's under the cover. Yeah, yeah. And that's not a euphemism, perhaps. But I think you're well known for doing something really, really nice and bringing joy to people's screens, and you've grown it organically. And I think you and your family should be really proud of what you're doing, because, you know, I'm sure all the biking world are grateful for the message you're spreading.
Oh, thanks so much. Thank you.
Sorry, I got lost in the Haribo euphemisms there. But let's get our minds out of the gutter. Harvey, right, final question time.
Ooh.
We want you to create that idyllic mental image. I mean, you've been so wonderful in describing what you've done so far, but we're after your fantasy ride, please. We want to know where you're going, who you're going to go with, what bike you're riding, and if you listen to music, what music you're listening to.
I think there's two that spring to mind, but I'd love to go for a ride with my dad. So he rode when I was, well, before I was around and after, but then he got into an accident. Had two other kids as well, and he's been in a few accidents, but he really smashed his ankle up and then just completely quit.
Right.
No more biking ever, kind of thing. And so he's experienced it, he gets it, I get it, and we've spoken about bikes in sort of, I guess, in general. But I would love to go for just a poodle on comms with him, chatting nonsense. Go around Surrey, go grab a coffee, Sunday roast, something like that, and chat nonsense. I'd love to do that. So I'd be on my Bonneville, and he can be on whatever he wants to be on. So Mike Kawasaki, or we can get in the rock. But yeah, I think that would be really, really, really cool.
No music, I'm assuming. If you're on comms with your dad, you just sing to each other. You don't need a soundtrack, do you?
Yeah. I mean, we had a playlist on the way to school when I was little, so maybe that could be Depeche Mode and Simon Garfunkel and whatever. So maybe that could get on it. Or he might just tell me to be quiet.
Nice taste in going to school music. That, I mean, that's their deep dives. They're the bands that can teach you about the fundamentals and foundations of music, mate. That's not him chucking, I don't know, the Venger Boys on, is it?
Yeah, no, he's got a big wall of vinyls and he's massively into his music. And so, yeah.
I tell you what, Prots, honestly, Harvey, that might be one of the nicest down-to-earth ones we've had. We've had some really idyllic rides, but to go in the Surrey Hills with your dad, listening to music that he used to play to you as a child, I mean, that's a nice image. I like that one.
Yeah.
That's a fantasy ride and a half.
Yeah, that'd be really cool, really, really special. Or Keanu Reeves.
So, yeah,
yeah. Keanu Reeves on a rocket.
I don't know how cool your dad is, but Keanu Reeves pretty up there. Yeah,
yeah. I think that'd be pretty cool.
The Keanu Reeves would be a good one, actually. Yeah. Ewan's right, Harvey. It distills what the essence of being on a bike is, and all the discussions about, yes, it's a great way of getting from A to B, but sometimes the bit in the middle is where the fun is and the magic happens, and you've quite ably shown us that, given your kind of travels. And. And long may it continue. I'm going to get stuck into the series on YouTube, and I can't wait to see what comes, because, unfortunately, I mean, that's it for this week's full chat. You've been so good joining us from another continent. it's a really sterling effort by yourself. Full chat, of course, is powered by Bikeshorts, the UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker. They'll tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your annual bike, scooter or moped insurance, and so much more.
Oh, huge thank you to today's special guest, all the way from Australia. Absolutely amazing chatting to you, the one and only Harvey Rides Bikes. Thanks, mate.
Thanks for having me. Thank you so much. Cheers.
You've been wonderful, Harvey. Don't forget to press subscribe on YouTube so that you never, ever miss a glorious episode like this one. Or you can press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. See you later.